This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 180. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 771.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Nikhil Sharma. Well, welcome along to the show, everybody. We have a new presenter on this week, made a special guest appearance last week, but he's on the full show this week to fill in for Berners. Welcome along, Nikhil.
Hey.
So, Gareth, how's it going this week? What's been happening with you?
Just been preparing. I've got I'm tutoring a ECB Level 3 batting module tomorrow. So I'm going up to Derby and doing that, and also prepping for the fielding one, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. But very much looking forward to those.
Yeah, interesting times. And of course, the World 2020 has started. And as we've got Nikhil on the show, I thought we'd have a little chat about what India's chances are. What do you think, Nikhil? How do you think India are going to do in this World 2020 tournament?
If Dhoni could change his selection, you know, the way he selects people, he is a bit biased. You know, like Rohit, he has performed in one match out of 15. Five wickets in a row, that's a huge thing. You've got to change your selection. Gambhir is not in great shape, and Sehwag too. So if he takes in someone like Manoj Tiwari or Jinkya Rahane, and what the hell was he doing in the last warm-up match? No Umesh Yadav, who has performed so well. If he changes this selection, I think he has a great chance of winning the World Cup.
Oh, selection's an interesting issue. How scientific is selection going to be in this tournament, Gareth?
Well, I mean, going on from our previous conversations about IPL and everything, I should imagine it will play a significant place in it. And looking back on the previous World Cup, the one that England won, you know, there were a lot of things that came together for England. One of the biggest pushes from the coaches and from the captain at the time, Paul Collingwood, was to get Ryan Sidebottom into the side ahead of Jimmy Anderson. And a lot of eyebrows were raised, and I'm sure those eyebrows are still raised at that decision. But actually, the statistics showed that left-arm seamers were going to play a significant role in that T20 World Cup. So they went up purely on the fact that Ryan was a left-arm seamer, and he went through and had a fantastic World Cup, and England ended up winning. So, you know, if that's anything to go by, then statistics and analysis are going to play a big part in this World Cup.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting because, you know, of the background of the IPL and how that translates into the international game. It's going to be an interesting one to watch, and I bet you there's going to be some things at the end of that tournament that we didn't think so much about at the beginning of the tournament, because there usually is in one of these World 2020s, isn't there?
Yeah, something will definitely raise itself, and you know, it's going to be really interesting. Sri Lanka's a fantastic place to play cricket, brilliant place to play one day cricket, because the crowds are magnificent, and we've already seen some massive hits in the warm-up games as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the batting in particular and what the scores end up being over in Sri Lanka, because certainly the hitting in the warm-up games that I watched yesterday was phenomenal.
And Nikhil, would you put your reputation on the line to predict a winner, or is it too close to call?
Okay, I may put my reputation online. I think South Africa have a great chance of winning the World Cup. If not South Africa, then England.
Interesting. And Gareth, is it too close to call for you, or do you think someone is going to come from the pack?
I think England will struggle out there, to be honest. I'm not saying they won't progress well in the tournament. They've got good players. They've got experience of winning the competition. I think the lack of a left-arm seamer is something that's big. Obviously, the player of the tournament last time round, and Kevin Peterson, isn't going to be at the tournament as well. And I just think that it's going to be difficult for them to replicate their win out in the West Indies, where they played so brilliantly. South Africa are a good shout. I agree with that. My only downside to that is I think they lack class in their batting a little bit, and it would be interesting to see what number Jacques Callis ends up batting. I should imagine he'll probably be a bit higher out in the World Cup than he was when he was playing over here in the last couple of weeks in T20. I think ultimately the best players do well in this competition, KP being a great example from 2 years ago, and somebody like Jacques Callis and De Villiers is going to have to play really, really well if they're going to do well in the World Cup. I think Sri Lanka have got a good chance. I do think India have got a good chance. And generally, when world tournaments are played in the subcontinent, it's a subcontinent team that comes out on top. So so I wouldn't go too far away from our subcontinent teams, to be honest.
Now, just leading on from that, we've been looking at profiling on the site in your articles recently, and trying to identify strengths and weaknesses of players and how to profile them. And we got a follow up question from Tony, which is interesting. Gareth, I think Tony was trying to find out a little bit more about it, and I think he was a bit confused about where to start. He sent an email through saying that what he was looking for was a kind of a 101 style explanation of, say, you're coaching in a club and you don't have anything in place at all for profiling. There's so much choice on what to profile for players. It's almost like, well, you know, how deep do we go into this thing? How deep into the stack do we go before, you know, it starts becoming you're just collecting numbers and doing things for the sake of it and you're not actually making any improvements? So if you were going into a club there was a strong youth setup, where do you start with setting up profiling across, you know, what could be 100, maybe 200 kids across different age groups?
Well, in order to profile 200 kids effectively, you're going to have a lot of coaches. So I wouldn't is the first point protocol. I think what you do is you choose the players that you want to profile, because there are players there for very different reasons. And you know, if there's some guys that are there to play social cricket and to be with their mates, you know, then profiling is probably not the thing for them. But I think we all recognize the ones that want to go on in the game, whether it be up to professional level or whether it be into playing a very good standard of cricket. And it's those sorts of people that we need to be profiling on. So if the first thing you need to do is to identify the ones that benefit from this, I think that's the first crucial bit. The second thing is to really keep it very simple and break it down into batting, bowling and fielding. And if you can pick out four key points or five key points from each of those three areas that you want to identify, key points that you often talk about within your coaching, often talk about to your players, and do a profile based on those from 0 to 10, then that's going to be a great starting spot. So if stance and setup is important for you as a batting coach, then assess everybody against that parameter. You know, are they a 10? Are they absolutely where you want them? Or are they, you know, a 5 and there is work to do? Get the player to do the same. See if he agrees. If he does agree, then that's an area that you can work on as a development area over the coming months. You know, so really, excuse me, just narrow it down as much as you can to the things that you talk about as a coach, the things that you will follow up as a coach, and you can't go wrong.
And a kind of follow-up to that would be, what kind of difference would you see in those players who are getting profiled?
Well, their programs would be different in that they would be more targeted, because that's what you want. You want people who want to work at their game, that have aspirations to have slightly more targeted programs. And that's not being elitist. It's just meeting the participant need. So if I've got a group of 20 players who really just want to have a lot of fun, want to see how far they can hit the ball, want to talk about the great catch that one of them took, when they're in the playground during the week, then you meet the participant needs. You set up your practices to do that. But if you've got somebody, and I go back to the Danny Briggs example at Ventnor Cricket Club, you know, if Danny Briggs had been coached in exactly the same way as every other 9-year-old when he walked into Ventnor Cricket Club, then he wouldn't be playing for England out of the 2020 World Cup. My dad coached 69-year-olds, but this one person stuck his hand up and said, I want to do a bit more than this. I want to be a bit better. And that's not being elitist. That's just meeting somebody's need. This profiling thing would have been perfect for Danny at the age of 9, 10, 11, all the way up through his age group. And I know he did it very much as part of his academy program at Hampshire. But so you can get it into them really early. So if you've got somebody who says, you know, whether he says it out loud, I want to be, you know, this and this is where I want to go, or whether his talent and the way that he goes about things merits it, then we have to meet the participant need. And to me, if somebody sticks their head above it and says, I want to be a bit different, I want to do this, I want to do that, then we have to be there as a coach to support that.
Okay, let's wrap up the introduction now with our yes-no round. And every week, of course, we have three questions that we can only answer yes or no to. And as Berners is away this week, doing more PV1 stuff, actually, is what he's up to this week, then I will read out the questions. And if Gareth and Nicol, you want to answer just yes or no to each of these three questions. First question is, bowling pace is more important than accuracy?
No.
No.
Cricketers are the most superstitious sportsmen?
No.
Yes.
Global tournaments are more interesting than bilateral series?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, it's time now for the question section. Of course, every week we have two questions, and those two questions are answered. The best question of the week from the mailbag also wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we've got two questions this week, and I am going to do the honours on reading these out. And if Nicol and Gareth, you could give us your thoughts on the subject. The first is from Dhruv, and he says, can you give me some advice on techniques and methods of playing spinners who have a short leg and or a silly point in place on a turning pitch? So an attacking field, the pitch is against you. He's playing 2 and 3 day games, so he doesn't really need to smash the ball around generally. He needs to hang around and accumulate runs. And he was also wondering a little bit about arm balls as well. But I think the first part of the question is the most important one. So you're playing on a turning pitch. You've got a short leg and a silly point. You need to accumulate runs for the side. What's the way that you play?
See, if spinners have got two fielders close to you, you should not be, you know, it's natural that you may get fear. You may get surprised, oh, I can't play that shot, I may get caught out. But be sure, you have to have confidence in your front foot defense as well as back foot defense, because defense is what will keep you in game. So just make sure, just imagine like there's no one, and make sure your defense is really good. Because if your defense is good, the ball won't pop out. It will stay on the ground. No fielder can catch it then. And play your natural game.
Yeah, I think there's some good advice there. And the important thing when you defend against spin is that the ball hits the bat rather than the bat hits the ball. So that's something that, you know, working with the likes of Graham Gooch, he always talked about it, and he was probably one of England's best players of spin for you know, 15, 20 years in the way that he went about playing on spinning wickets. And his innings in the semi-final, I think it was the 1987 World Cup, was phenomenal because he defended the spinners fantastically, and he then chose to attack. And the two things that he said is, when you defend, let the ball hit the bat. And the second thing you do is to make sure that you don't forget about scoring, because as soon as you stop thinking about scoring, then these guys around the back come into play massively, because all that they're looking for is that defensive shot. And if you're only looking to defend, then they're going to be in the game. So ultimately, you have to take them out of the equation. You know, you should use your feet more when the ball spins and when it doesn't spin. You should be more aggressive when the ball spins, because ultimately, on these 2 or 3 day pitches, particularly in India, particularly in the subcontinent, if you just stand there trying to defend your wicket, then at some stage you're going to get out, and you're going to get out with very few runs to your name. And ultimately, batting is about scoring, whether you're in a position of trying to stay in or whether you're in a position to try and get ahead of a game. You have to score, because otherwise the pressure just gets put upon you and all of the balls are in the court of the bowler. So, you know, keep your intent, keep your natural game, which was a great piece of advice a minute ago. But when you defend, let the ball hit the bat and make sure you're still not moving into the ball with your body as you make contact with that ball, and the ball will drop down at your feet. The other thing that we need to be aware of now is also the role of DRS, because even if umpires haven't got a DRS, umpires now watch DRS and see that a lot of balls are going to be hitting the wickets. Whereas a few years ago, if you played back pad and it hit you on the pad, you wouldn't get given out. Even in club cricket, now you do get given out. So get that bat out in front of the pad particularly when you're defending in line with the stumps. Get the bat out, try and make sure that the ball is hitting the bat rather than the bat hitting the ball, but the bat face is in front of your pad, so you're giving yourself every chance of getting that ball onto the bat rather than hitting you on the pad. But keep your scoring intent. It's so important, and you see so many young players go into their shell and just put themselves under pressure and allow a bowler to bowl. And when that happens, they're in the game, and so a short leg and silly point.
Nickel, you play quite a lot on turning pitches, don't you? So is playing the ball out in front of the pad something that you like to see as well?
You see, I always like to, you know, make sure that the ball hits the bat rather than the pad. But in India, I think BC side doesn't support DRS. They think it's inaccurate. So I think on turning pitches, don't think much about those fielders. Just make sure you have a very good defense. You've got to have it. And after that, play your natural game, score runs, they won't matter much. They are just to distract you. If, you know, like, see Rahul Dravid, VVS Lakshman, they had great defense. What most captains did was play some fielders there. Now, who knows that they will ever get caught because their defense is so good. Just to distract them, they place there. And with, you know, like, you are distracted by those fielders. You can't, you know, you also have the pressure of scoring runs. So, just forget about them. Just make sure you are playing your natural game, and defense is really good.
This next question is mainly for you, Gareth, because it's a bit more on the range hitting question that we had recently, or the range hitting article, I should say, that you put on recently. It's from Brendan. He says he followed the discussion on range and target hitting recently on the site, on pitchvision.com, and he did a session with his senior players who enjoyed it. So the message is getting out there, Gareth. But he watched 2020 on television, and there was a lack of boundaries and sixes, and he wondered why the professionals practice that range hitting with length balls, because they don't get that many length balls. He says, much is made of purposeful practice and transferring match skills to practice and vice versa. Yeah, I find this hitting length balls somewhat contradicts it, especially at the international level. Surely there should be more emphasis on hitting back of a length, slower ball variations and other deliveries likely to be faced in a match situation. So what's your view on that, Gareth?
My view is that the definition of length is more of a commentator's term. So whenever the ball goes out the park, it's an easy thing to say, oh, a bowler's bowled length, and without being too detrimental to commentators, you know, they generally go with the easiest thing to say. So I'm not a believer that you know, the commentator's terminology should dictate what we do or say as coaches and therefore as players. But that's the first thing. The second thing is, I'm not aware that people do just practice hitting length, and certainly in the professional and international environments that I've been in, you know, the practice has been specific. We've looked at low full tosses because people miss yorkers. We look at the slower ball bouncer because that ball's coming into the game more and more nowadays. So, you know, being able to hit a ball between sort of chest and head height that's coming at you with no pace on it at all and hit those areas that we talked about in the article is massively important. So so those things are happening, but they're very difficult to replicate. So bowling machines, you can't really replicate a slower ball on a bowling machine. So therefore, we have to get very good at throwing slower ball bumpers and using our sidearm, for example, to get slower ball bumpers out there as well, which means a great deal of coach skill, and it's something that people need to be working on. Getting those, I absolutely agree, transferable practice is important. I don't know that international cricket doesn't do that, and I'm surprised if they aren't doing that, because they certainly were 2 or 3 years ago when I was working in it. So if they are practicing length, then they've obviously reverted their style, because I certainly wasn't involved in that practice and didn't see any of our competitors when I was with England or Ireland practicing just length balls. So I'm not sure where that one's come from, to be honest.
And what about how that translates to a club level or a junior level, where you are going to get less of those variations and you are going to get more length bowling? I guess, you know, using that term as in a ball that's you know, on a line and length that the bowler's trying to pitch on. Do you practice it in that situation?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, international cricket, he's quite right. He's identified that very rarely do you get length balls in those key times of a game. So therefore, you need to train appropriately, which is low full tosses, trying to dig yorkers out, hit slower ball bumpers. You know, so that's what international cricket does. In the same vein, you've got to make sure your training programs are relevant and specific to the cricket that you're playing in. So, you know, if you're not going to get those deliveries, then you make sure you practice with the deliveries you are. And if, you know, a middle stump length ball is where people are likely to go in the last few overs, A, because that's what they bowl or they haven't got the skills to do anything else, then yes, we have to practice that. Now, that's where bowling machines do come more in handy for club cricket practicing this type of skill, because you can line up a bowling machine to do that. It's very difficult to make a bowling machine change pace and keep the relevance of the practice. But if somebody's not going to be changing their pace in club cricket, and I'm not saying that all bowlers don't change their pace, but you know, some people do just keep the same pace when they bowl, then you know, practice specifically. And we've always said try and keep things as specific as possible to the match type and the level that you're playing at, because that obviously encourages people to play better when they get out on the field.
Nickel, how much 2020 are you involved with? Is it a common format for you?
Yeah, it is really common. Most of the times I play, it is 15 or 20 overs. Or even if it is test cricket, it ends in not more than 2 days.
Okay, so do you do much specific 2020 practice or hitting practice compared to, you know, more traditional style practice?
I guess not, because it's just like a normal training. You have fielding sessions, then you go in nets. And what coaches may tell you is, what I tell is that focus on which ball to hit and which ball to not. But the more T20 is being played now, you have to focus that you have need to get run every ball. Don't care if it is 1 or 6, but you need to get run on every ball. Because like in 50 over format, if you take singles, every ball you will reach to a total 300, which is really good. But in T20, it would be 120, which is nothing. So you've got to have a really, you know, like power hitting in yourself. Because if you in 50 over format, if a bad ball comes in your way, you smack it for 4. But in T20, you have to smack it for 6. And even which we call good balls, don't take risk. Feel the ball like, if you know, just outside of stump, you know, you can get out. Practice that in the nets to help you not getting out. And if you think it's really impossible, then leave it. Don't play the shot, because the main aim of the bowler is also to get the wicket, not to bowl maidens and maidens over and over. So you see, you have to know which ball you can hit and which you not, and work on your weaknesses as well, but don't forget your strength.
Okay, here we are. It's time of the week where one of the members of the panel gets up on the soapbox, has a rant and rave, and this week it's David's turn.
We were talking about commentators before, and I was thinking about coachisms this week and how a lot of new terms are creeping into the game. I mean, we have a tail-ender every week where we talk about some kind of term. Sometimes it's quite funny, sometimes it's more serious, but there's new terms creeping into the game all the time. And I think people often scoff at new terms just purely because they're new terms. Like, for example, when you say areas, when you mean line and length. And I think that there's nothing wrong with having those terms as long as they mean something, as long as they're not just something to say in a press conference or some way to get around saying what you really mean. If it's a quicker way to say what you really want, then by all means use that term if it helps someone to understand and get a more effective result from the way that they play, then let's use those new terms. That is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. But before we go, we've got to decide a few things, the first of which is the competition winner for this week. So we had Brendan's question about power hitting, following up on power hitting, and Drew's question about playing spin bowling on a turning pitch. Gareth, which one did you prefer?
Well, bearing in mind, there's two reasons for this, and they're pretty terrible reasons. But the first reason that I'm going to give is the fact that we're coming into that World 2020. So power hitting and range hitting is going to come into play in that. And obviously the sides that are going to do well are going to have people that can clear the ropes on a regular basis. Also, it's a follow-up to an article as well. So that ticked one of my boxes. So apologies to Drew on that one. But Brendan's my winner this week.
Well, Gareth, it's completely your decision on who wins these. So you don't need a good reason. You just need to choose. So that sounds fine to me. Now, if somebody wanted to get in touch and send their own question in and have a chance of winning a prize, Gareth, what would they need to do to get in touch with us?
Well, you could either send an email to coach@pitchedvision.com or you could call us on 0208 816 7691.
You can, and you can also get us on Twitter at PB Cricket Coach, and if you want to go over to Facebook, you can find us on Facebook at / Pitch Vision Academy. You can also subscribe to the show if you want to listen every week. You can head over to iTunes and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us there. And if you want to listen in any other way, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link at the top and you'll get all the subscription details there. Now, this week's tail ender is one I heard recently on the radio, which they mocked. In fact, going back to my soapbox, the term was mocked on the radio. It was called going deep. And it was when a side are chasing runs in a one-day format, they aim to stay in the game. In other words, you can fall a little bit behind the run rate as long as you don't lose too many wickets, because you can go deep into the innings and you can hit balls at the end, and you can go up a lot quicker at the end than you possibly think, as long as you are in a position where you've got wickets in hand. So but they sort of scoffed at that, the commentators. So Gareth, I don't know what you think about that term, going deep.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it. You know, I honestly do think that you've got to be proactive and win games as best as you can up front as well, and that backloading of pressure is something that I'm not a massive fan of. So yeah, it's not a term that I would use, but I've definitely heard it around changing rooms in the past.
I guess if you lose some early wickets, it's a bit of a way to think, well, okay, we can still stay in this game even if we're falling behind the rate.
Yeah, I suppose so. But you know, I think, again, yeah, terminology is a wonderful thing. What will work for one person won't work for another. And, you know, I suppose, yeah, you know, going deep, taking the game as far as you can, seeing what can happen, all of that sort of stuff comes into play and is often talked about, yeah. So I suppose it can work in a positive light in those sort of situations. So, yeah, good one for bringing that up.
Okay, so that's all we've got time for this week. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Nickel.
Cheers, lads.